You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It's a Locked On Podcast Network crossover extraordinaire. Locked On Pacers, Locked On Celtics for another one tonight. As always, I'm one of the hosts of Locked On Pacers, Tony East, covering the team for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News. And with me here to talk about a non-playoff game, unlike all the rest of our conversations for the rest of time, John Corrales. John, how you been, man?
I've been great. It's been a lot of fun this season so far. How have you been?
Much more fun than last year. Is that?
Yeah. Let's say the least.
The Pacers have been fun too. Yeah, they're doing better than anyone thought without Oladipo. So it's been.
Yeah, great for you guys. You get Oladipo back at some point, like. Not just holding down the fort, but really playing well.
Yeah. I don't think anyone thought they'd be over 500. I mean, their schedule's been cake, but they've had some nice wins. Been looking pretty good.
Cake.
Huh?
I said, you still got to eat your cake.
Still got to eat your cake. Exactly. They've done a good job with that. Pretty much only one, maybe bad loss, the Hornets, the whole year. So the Celtics, though, are damn good. And the Pacers, obviously, would like to beat them after the sweep in the playoffs last year, though many members of that team are gone. I know that was discussed in the locker room after the Pacers lost to the Clippers on Monday. Has anyone on the Celtics said anything about looking back at last year's series? I know that they obviously won that and got eliminated in the next round, so maybe they don't think about it as much at this point in time.
I'll tell you that the last thing the Celtics want to do is think back to last year. They have seriously, like, beyond the we just don't want to talk about it, they have literally just made it their mission to, we are not talking about last year. We have turned the page. That's done. This is this year's team. It's over. And I don't know if you heard anything from Marcus Smart after the Celtics played in Brooklyn, where Kyrie didn't play in that game, and the guys kind of went over. He didn't travel to Boston for that game. They did like a home and home. When Boston went to Brooklyn, he was there on the bench, and a bunch of guys went over and said hi, and they were asked about it afterwards. And Marcus Smart was like, you know what? It is what it is. We still like Kyrie, those of us who were over there. Kyrie's still cool. We're done talking about it, and we want you to stop talking about it because it's a disservice. It's a slap in the face to those guys who are in this locker room, on this team, putting in the work this year to keep talking about this dude who isn't even here anymore. So they are like, do not ask them about last year. They will bite your head off.
Well, that's kind of how I feel about Paul George, which happened on Monday. I get tired of rehashing that in the same way. Well, I get it too. So this is kind of a free segue for me into the Celtics being really good. They're 17-5, right? I get why you'd want to be like, please stop talking about last year. We are literally kicking butt. We are top 10 in offense and defense. Like, they won that game, I'm assuming. So it's like, please talk to us about this year. So obviously Kemba is a great, fill in for Kyrie, and Hayward has taken this step forward, which Indy people like because Butler. But what is the driver for the Celtics team success this year? Is that a lot of it right there?
Well, Kemba is a big driver because he's so easy to play with. He's so easy to get along with. His kind of attitude, his demeanor is kind of great for this team. I keep going back to this moment earlier in the season against Toronto where the Celtics got down big. They've had a habit of slow starts for most of the season. They got down big. Kemba came back in the fourth quarter, and he was cooking. And Jaylen Brown took an ill-advised early shot clock jumper. And the next stoppage, very quickly, at the free throw line, he looked back at Kemba to be like, my bad. And Kemba's like, it's cool, man. Don't worry about it at all. It's fine. And juxtapose that with Kyrie last year, very famously being demonstrative on the court when he didn't get the ball. This was a moment where it kind of showed the demeanor, the chemistry, the camaraderie, and Kemba just picked up where he left off. And more importantly, Jaylen in that moment came back and made a couple of big plays for the Celtics to beat the Raptors at home. That's kind of where it begins. But there's also growth from Jaylen Brown. There's growth from Jason Tatum.
Jaylen over 20 points a game is unfair, man.
Yes. I mean, he's done things this season that I didn't expect. He's evolved to a point where I didn't think he would evolve at this stage of his career. So he's been shooting well from three. He's attacking and a varying attack. He's got a little step back in the lane, a little fadeaway. He's seeing the floor. He's passing. He's doing like lookaways. It's very impressive how he's progressed this season. Tatum's still figuring things out, and he's averaging 21 a game. So,
oh boy.
So you really could have, now that Gordon Hayward's back, a couple of big Gordon Hayward games, you really could be looking at going into January, at some point in January, with the Celtics having four guys averaging right about 20 points a game in Tatum, Brown, Kemba, and Gordon Hayward. So I will say that the hierarchy of those four guys and not having 10 guys on the floor feel like they're all at the same level. Having those guys and being able to stagger those guys, and then everybody else is just, you just know you're not them and those are your scorers. Like, that's also very important for them.
Yeah, the balanced attack has to be nice too, right? It makes it harder to guard.
Sure. You
know, the Pacers this year have, in a similar way, you know, they have five guys right now averaging double figures, and it almost seems like every game there's a sixth guy that pops up into double figures, and it's their thing. You know, everybody's getting the ball, everybody does their job. But I think the Celtics, it's different in that all four of them are like big time scorers and can have like a 30 to 35 point night anytime. You know, Kemba's hitting absurd numbers of threes this season, and Jaylen, like you said, hitting everything at the rim, and we know how good Hayward has been this year, and Tatum obviously taking a little bit of another step forward. Like, any of those guys any night can go off. We saw that in the playoffs last year. Hayward had that 9-for-9 game against the Pacers in Indy, and that was the whole game. They stopped everybody else, and Hayward's like, okay, I got this. So I just don't know how you guard this team when they stagger everything so well.
Yeah, I mean, they're obviously going to come out with those four guys plus Daniel Tice.
So is Smart out, or is he just not smart start normally?
Smart is questionable, but when at fully healthy, he's not going to start. He's coming off the bench.
Okay.
Yeah, so their starting unit at full health is Kemba, Jaylen, Jason, Hayward, and Daniel Tice, and that's worked for them. Marcus Smart, he'll tell you that, yes, obviously everybody wants to start, but he's going to do what it takes to win these games, and they may finish with Marcus Smart in the closing lineup down the stretch. Kind of depends on situation, but a closing lineup of Smart, Kemba, Jaylen, Jason, and Gordon, that is certainly possible.
Wow.
And yeah, and so it'd be interesting to see if they try that down the stretch with, you know, if you throw out Sabonis and Miles Turner. Like, I don't know how the Celtics guard that, but conversely, who does Miles Turner guard? Who does Sabonis guard in that situation? So the whole point of the Celtics defense is to combat that size by flying around and trying to get into passing lanes and force guys into spots on the floor. And if the net effect is, all right, well, Miles Turner tries to post somebody up. Okay.
To win.
Yeah. What? Right. You know, like that's, I think it's, I don't want to overstate it, but there is some level of kind of maybe basketball genius in the fact that if the net effect of going small and being super switchy and having all of these guys that can pass and play and score and slash, if the net effect is the other team just tries to post you up like crazy, then great. Isn't the post up one of the least efficient plays in on offense? Like,
it is, so when Sabonis is not on your team.
But even so, like, post-ups only get you a certain percentage. They're not going to get you 90% efficiency.
Right.
Like, and it still drags down. Like, you guys have Brogdon. You guys have Warren. You guys have dynamic scorers on the team. If you're just dumping it into a mismatch and trying to let him muscle his way, that's going to bog down the offense. And as I've said like a bunch of times, if you're trying to get into Turner or Sabonis and they're trying to get you on the post and they miss, well, they're the last two guys back on defense. And the Celtics are out there running and they're fast. They may not be big, but they're fast. And there's no way Turner and Sabonis are catching up. So all of a sudden you're in transition. You got cross matches and your two best, you know, or at least one of your best shot blockers is back behind the entire play. So they better hit those shots in the post.
We were talking about the cross matches on our show on Monday because that's interesting to me, right? I think Tice is a pretty good defender. And what teams have done against the Pacers this year, and the Celtics will almost certainly do the same thing, is Tice will guard Sabonis, right? They'll put center on the guy who operates more inside, and then Hayward or whoever they call the four, put air quotes.
Right, Jalen.
Yeah, Jalen will guard Turner. And if there's ever double drag, stuff gets a little confusing, but on most sets, it's, you know, pretty standard and easy. And then the Pacers will flip it where Sabonis will guard Jalen, whatever, Hayward, whoever, and then Turner will guard Tice. And, you know, centers with ball handling skills have been killing Turner this year. Tice does not super have that, but those cross matches will be interesting. And I think you're right that the Celtics will be happy to let whoever post up, especially if Smart's the guy they're posting up on. By the way, Marcus Smart, Pacers killer, shot 61.1% from three 2 years ago against the Pacers. So I always remember. Yeah, I always remember him just getting hot magically against the Pacers. But we were talking about how interesting those cross matchups are because that seems like to me the place where the Pacers could get an advantage is, especially in those canter minutes, is they're always going to have a capable center on the floor. Though, yes, on the flip side, like you said, there are a lot of ways for the Celtics to get out and run and exploit it on the other end.
Yeah, it actually hurts the Celtics that Robert Williams is going to be out because he's more mobile and more athletic. Cantor minutes have just been killers for the Celtics. Like
I for one am shocked to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing you can hope for, obviously, it's the same old story, right? The only thing you can hope for with Cantor is that he can do enough offensively to counteract how bad he is defensively. That's it. Like he's been great on offensive rebounds. Like it's kind of like insane to look at him go out there and position himself and get these offensive rebounds. He's one of the most brilliant offensive rebounds I've ever seen. But at the same time, you put him in a pick and roll and it's just
free points.
You might as well just, as soon as you just say, hey, it's like the in baseball where you decide to walk a guy and you don't have to throw the pitches. Like just tell the ref, hey ref, we're gonna put Cantor in the pick and roll and be like, okay, here's 2 points.
Well, okay, so
you don't even have to like waste the time.
He'll be the backup, right? Because Robert Williams is out.
Yeah.
So
or
Poirier.
Poirier could, but they may decide to go small with either Semi Ojeleye or Grant Williams.
Okay. Oh, I love
that. Like that might be a counter to the because that's something that Brad's done. When the Celtics when Cantor's just been a complete disaster in pick and roll defense, they'll go small and throw one of those two, Ojeleye or Grant Williams, and both are capable. Ojeleye and
I know Grant. I wanted Grant badly in the project process.
And he's been good. I mean, he's not been great offensively, but he's set picks, he's rebounded, he's passed. He's really a good passer. And he's smart. He's one of the smartest players on the floor. So even though he's kind of having some of the typical rookie struggles, I would not be surprised if they may throw Cantor out there. And it's, you know, the Celtics are on a back-to-back as well. This is the first night.
Yeah.
So, and they have Philly on the other night. So they may decide to maybe save Cantor for Philly because in the season opener, they started Cantor against Embiid. I wouldn't be surprised if they started Cantor against Embiid this time as well because Embiid just devours Daniel Tice. Like the whole post-up thing that I said doesn't apply to Embiid versus Daniel Tice. That's like 100,000% that he's going to score. So he'll probably start Cantor against Embiid And so I wouldn't be surprised if Brad said, save Cantor as much as we can and go small and see if the Ogele-Grant Williams combination kind of works against the Pacers.
Because what I was thinking is, you know, if Sabonis is in there and Cantor's the lone center, it's like that negates a lot of his rebounding. And you have a maestro in the pick and roll that he has to guard. It's like if the Pacers can win those minutes by 10, they can hang with the Celtics having a substantial starter advantage in this game. And that's why I'm curious who the backup center is going to be. And I think Grant makes a lot of sense. You know, he's strong and small that can kind of hang with Sabonis, and Semi's kind of the same way. So I get how they could go either way with those guys, but those Cantor minutes, if they do happen, are going to be crucial for the Pacers.
Absolutely. If you see Cantor out there, just target him like crazy.
Yeah. So I bet they send Sabonis straight in if Cantor comes in.
Yeah, absolutely. I would expect, I've talked to Brad Stevens about Sabonis. Like, he just holds Sabonis in the highest regard when it comes to picks. I remember talking to him once about screen assists, and he was like, what the hell is a screen assist? Like, it's one of those stats that we look at, but he's like, that's just, that's meaningless to me. But as soon as I said screen assist, he said, I bet those Pacers guys are at the top of the league. Because
love it.
He knows that the screens that they set Sabonis into, like, especially Sabonis, like, he is very, very, very well aware of what Sabonis does in pick and roll. So I would be shocked if he puts Cantor in that position.
And the great Sabonis negator is now on the 76ers. So,
yeah.
What can I say?
Why do you say things that hurt me so much?
Well, the Sixers did their number on the Pacers already, so we can move past.
That's true. That's true.
We can move.
So there, your comeuppance.
I did it. Where are the Celtics' weaknesses? I mean, they're top 10 in both offense and defense, but they can't be perfect.
The bench has been a weakness, and some of it has been because of injuries. But they really don't go that deep on the bench, and it's. You can put Grant Williams in there and he's fine. You can put Carson Edwards in there from time to time and he'll be okay. But, and Chimi Ojeleye started the season horribly. Like, first 10 games of the season, he shot 20% from three, but he shot 40% since. No. So he's kind of picked it up. But I think the Celtics bench is just going to be one of the lowest scoring benches in the league because the Celtics get so much from their starters. Their top four guys are going to get you, like in the Cavs game, the starters got them 85 points and the bench got them 25. So they're going to be like a top heavy team. They're not going to get a ton off the bench. So if there's any sort of injury or foul trouble or anything like that, and one of those guys is forced into action, then that's a weakness for sure. Carson Edwards on the floor, he's there to be like a shooter, and he hasn't been shooting well.
Other than that, Locked On Pacers listeners know all about Carson Edwards.
I'm sure you do. So the Celtics bench has been a weakness, and then also some of the Celtics own kind of individual they're still prone to kind of going off on their own and not playing connected. The thing that makes the Celtics especially great defensively is when that so-called playing on a string and everybody's moving in concert with one another. If the wing players are kind of bored or not into it or just having a bad day, then that can be a real problem because Daniel Tice has been very good, but very good in a certain piece to that puzzle. He's very good in that role, but he's not going to be the type of guy that, like, if Malcolm Brogdon is just consistently getting past the initial line of defense and it's forcing Daniel Tice to make decisions, then that's not Daniel Tice. Daniel Tice is very good in rotations and calling out the play. And he can see things and call things out. And if everybody's doing everything that they're supposed to do, he can be a very, very good piece to the puzzle. He is not an elite defensive center by any stretch, even though his defensive numbers might look good. if Indiana can kind of get past the initial line of defense and force Theis to make decisions, then that's a big weakness, because what's going to end up happening is going to be what happened against the Brooklyn when Spencer Dinwiddie was throwing lobs to Jared Allen. And it's just going to be Miles Turner doing chin-ups on the rim for like 10 minutes at a time.
Oh man, he needs a big game for some confidence.
Yeah, I hope he gets that confidence in the next game.
His offense has been tough the last couple weeks.
I want to know what's going on with that. Like, Sabonis has been playing well.
Very well, yeah, oh yeah. Fringe All-Star,
is there
maybe.
Something going on there contractually, like because Sabonis got his big extension? Is
they
there
both
like
make
a
like
rivalry
almost the
there?
Amount. I think they just don't really fit that well. And, you know, Turner's big thing on offense, you know, you saw this in the playoffs a little bit last year, is the pick and pop. He's a great pick and pop guy. He can hit the mid-ranger. He can step back from threes over 40%. Well, he might be under 40% now from three this year. He was over 40% from three at one point this year. But now they don't have him screen when he starts, because Sabonis is just better at it.
Right.
So he's kind of just relegated to the corner and the spot ups. And, you know, his whole life, he's been the guy, you know, as most NBA players are in high school and college. But
sure, of course.
You know, he's been more of the guy. And then even leading up to this year, he's gotten to start and been the focal point screener and gotten his shots. And now he just doesn't have that. And he gets, you know, his usage is like 24% with the bench, but he just has no rhythm. So he's just going to have to figure out how to play with Sabonis a little bit better to establish himself. And I think he can do that. You know, he's still the, you know, possibly the best drop coverage guy in the entire NBA. One of the best weak side rotators in the NBA. So his defense is still uber valuable, but his offense just has not been there at all this year.
Can I tell you what most Celtics fans are saying right now?
Trade him. Trade him to the Celtics.
We'll take him.
Yeah.
Not that I think that there's anything there anymore. Like, what's he making now? 15? 16?
Like 16, yeah. 4 for 72, whatever that is.
Yeah. So 18. I just don't – there's just no – before
I was so close to messaging you pre-extension times for, like, the Sabonis-Jaylen Brown talk that kept flying.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was...
Which now it's funny because I don't think either team would do it now for the opposite reason. No. I think they both got better, and then both teams like, nah.
yeah, exactly. Like, before this season started, people were like, okay, that was Celtics-Pacers trade before the season just made so much sense.
So much
sense. Like, it fit both timelines. Like, we need a big. You got one. You got an extra one.
It's a rare, like, basketball reasons trade that don't happen very often anymore.
It would have made perfect sense if they pulled that off. But right now, I mean, aside from there's nothing that works for – I just know from a Boston perspective. First of all, you can't trade Jaylen Brown because now after signing the extension, the whole CBA thing won't allow
–
it's so ridiculous, but – basically, he can't be traded. It's just insanely complicated to pull that deal off. And the only way you're going to match Miles Turner is to give up Marcus Smart. And maybe, because Miles Turner is like the only guy where I can sit there and say, like, well, the reason why you don't give up Marcus Smart is because he's a potential Defensive Player of the Year candidate as a guard, but Turner could be a Defensive Player of the Year candidate as a center in this. Put him on the Celtics in that starting lineup. Holy shit. Like, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
If he's the only guy that I might be like, well, let's talk this whole Marcus Smart thing through.
Yeah, I don't expect it to happen, you know.
And no, especially, God, no. Not at all.
And especially, like, I get that these games matter and they're evaluating players, but, like, nothing the Pacers do until Vic returns is, like, a data point for trades, you know. Does this guy fit with Vic is so much more important. So we'll find out next
month. Yeah, no, that makes total sense.
So
when's he supposed to be back?
He has done some full court 5-on-5 stuff with the G League team pretty recently. The original hopeful timeline was December, January. So I don't think he's quite 100% yet, and they're not going to let him back till he's 100%. So probably January, maybe late December. Okay. So you get a healthy dose of Jeremy Lamb, who's never missed a left elbow jumper in his life. yeah, I bet that just not to tremble in your boots level of scary, but I mean the wing matchup of Brown, Tatum, Hayward versus Lamb, Warren, and McDermott is heavily in favor of the Celtics. And you know, Warren's been very good this year, but he's gonna have his hands full in this game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Dougie McBuckets has been going off, right?
Oh, lighting it up this year. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, they also have to guard. And that's the whole thing. Like, it's one thing to go off offensively, but the thing about the Celtics wings is Tatum, Brown, Hayward are all like good defenders. Like,
and they're huge.
They've been like, I mean, you talk about switchability. They switch more than anybody. And they are active on defense. They are active. Jason Tatum is going to get into a passing lane, steal a pass, and go in for a dunk in this game against the Pacers. That's like basically guaranteed. At some point, these guys are going to get into passing lanes. They're going to tip a ball away. They're going to deflect it. That's more than all of these guys scoring 20 points a game, which is like the thing that everybody's talking about. They are very, very active defenders. And the only time that their defense suffers is when they decide that their defense is going to suffer. It's not like they're Kawhi or Paul George, but as a unit,
I saw a Celtics account show me Jaylen Brown, Kawhi Leonard comparisons. So I beg to differ. Why do they do this, man?
Well, Jaylen Brown was always supposed to be like Kawhi Light. Like that was the whole dream. Like back when he was a Spur, the whole do you trade Jaylen Brown for Kawhi Leonard talk was like, well, why do you trade Jaylen Brown for Kawhi Leonard when he's going to become Kawhi Leonard? And I don't know if he's ever going to become Kawhi Leonard, but he's actually becoming, when you talk about like Kawhi Light, I mean, he's scoring 20 a game and he's defending and he's playing that power forward. He's doing a lot of things. I mean, maybe he's more Sean Marion than Kawhi Leonard, but whatever it is, he's out there. He's playing pretty well. But the whole point is that these Celtics are going to defend. And when you bring up the Lamb, McDermott, Warren combination, I mean, how well are they going to defend on their end?
Yeah, I wonder if they'll try to get creative and put Brogdon on one of the wings and put Jeremy Lamb on Kemba. Just get a little bit.
I mean, my initial reaction is yeah, please.
Well, but Jeremy Lamb's more capable than Warren. He's an okay defender.
Well, Warren yeah, but bad. No, I'm talking about Kemba. I'm talking about McDermott on Kemba.
Oh, no. McDermott will not guard Kemba. Sorry. I was thinking of the starters. Brogdon, they'll move around. Yeah, McDermott can't really guard anybody. So
right.
I'm not really sure what their plan will be with him. Maybe they'll put him on Smart in those minutes. But other than that, I don't really know what they're going to do with him. He is not a good defender. His shot has kept him on the floor much more this year especially. But yeah, his defense is still very bad.
Well, we'll see. I think what Boston really, this is like 180 degrees. You opened up talking about last year. This really is 180 degrees from last year, because last year so much went wrong, and really honestly, like when you've probably done this podcast, I did this podcast. The best case scenario, the worst case scenario.
Yep.
Like Boston's kind of best case scenarios for at least their four perimeter players, like they've all kind of come to fruition. Kemba is still Kemba. Gordon is back. He's playing like kind of old Gordon, but plus a little extra element. Tatum and Brown have taken these steps forwards that have been very, very good. So for now, aside from Gordon Hayward breaking a bone in his hand, which luckily was his offhand, things have been basically as best case scenario as you can get for the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, that's, I mean, the not that the Pacers have had the same level of success, of course, but outside of Turner being
pretty good,
broken. Yeah, Sabonis looking awesome. Brogdon's probably an all-star. Warren and Lamb fit in well. It's a similar story. You know, everything's,
I guess that's really that's the difference between 17-5 and 15-9. Like that extra like one three player. Or four game separation, whatever it is, three games that were separated. It's the one guy that you were counting on that hasn't had the best case scenario, whereas Boston kind of has had it almost across the board. And that difference is three wins or whatever.
Yeah. Against a much tougher schedule, though. The Celtics, I think, are clearly the better team, which I think they will win this game. But I don't want to make you do a prediction if you don't want to.
Oh, they'll win this game.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I do think they'll probably win, but it's going to be tough. It really is going to be tough. Indy does present some very unique challenges that Boston hasn't had to face. So I joke, but it's not going to be an easy game.
Give my Indiana people the lowdown on Romeo. I know he's been banged up and mostly with Maine.
Banged up. I'm afraid to talk about him. It might cause another injury. I mean, this dude, I feel bad. Like, I just feel so bad for this kid. So obviously thumb surgery. Everybody knows that he had that thumb surgery.
In college.
Yes. So the thumb surgery to repair that injury that he had in college costs him summer league. He comes in, then he has, I'm trying to get the progression right here, a groin injury that keeps him out for a couple of preseason games. Then he starts to get a couple of preseason minutes here and there. Then he slips on a wet spot on the floor and sprains his knee. So then he's out for a while. Then he comes back and then he sprains his ankle. Then that costs him a little bit of time. Then he comes back in his first game back from the sprained ankle a week ago or so, and 17 minutes into a game where he had a 20-minute restriction, he sprains that same ankle again. Oh. You know, like, he has just been snake bitten. Now, they've sent him to the G League to get some reps. He's been, when he's healthy, those few minutes that he's been healthy, he's tearing it up in the G League. They're working on his shot. It's a total work in progress. They've kind of stripped it down. They're trying to rebuild it. It's falling he's becoming a little bit of a streaky shooter, but it's falling from time to time. But everything I've seen when he's out there and playing is he's this natural kind of fluid game comes to him very, very naturally kind of player. The Celtics seem to be very excited about the possibility of him helping them this season. Wow. I talked earlier about the bench being a problem. And I really do feel like they think if we can just get Romeo healthy, you throw Romeo out there in a, you know, with the guys that the Celtics have, you stagger, you know, Gordon and Jason Tatum, and you throw Marcus Smart and maybe a Romeo Langford out there, that Romeo could get some of that freedom and space because you got to pay so much attention to all those other guys, get some confidence that way. And he can actually help them scoring a few points off the bench. But damn it, this kid just needs to stay healthy for more than a couple of days.
I will root for him as an IU alumni. Alumnus? Alumni? I don't care.
I think singular is alumnus.
Yes, I think you are correct. I look forward to Indiana natives Purdue versus IU debating Carson versus Romeo for the rest of their Celtic lives.
Oh,
that'd be a fun story for someone to hunt down. If only they were going to be here tomorrow and I could talk to both of them. all right, John, anything else today before we get you out of here?
No, I don't know. I'm good.
I'm also good. It's going to be fun. Chip on their shoulder for the Pacers versus the Kumbaya Celtics right now. So, John is on Twitter at RedsArmy_John. And of course, he's at Mass Live and Locked On Celtics and Locked On NBA. He's everywhere. You still do Locked On NBA. Of course, I'm at TV's NBA. This podcast is at Locked On Pacers. And what is Locked On Celtics' Twitter handle?
At LO Celtics.
Oh, it's not Raining Jays anymore. I'm glad I asked.
Yeah, I know, because two of the three Jays left.
Oh,
bastards.
Thank you guys for tuning in, and we will see you very soon.